We're talking with our resident TV critic, Lauren Carol Harris. Hey, Lauren.
Hey, Jason.
Now, we're talking about an indie auteur who's moved across to the small screen this week, Greg Araki, an indie filmmaker whose work really crucially defined the new queer cinema movement in the 1990s. Now, it's, you know, I have seldom got such a reaction tweeting about a guest on the show as I did yesterday when I said Greg Araki's going to be on the show. I mean, it was unprecedented the amount of likes I got, almost, I think.
Yeah, big deal.
I mean, you know, it was almost three likes.
Semi-viral.
But now he's moved into episodic prestige internet TV, directing shows like 13 Reasons Why and Heathers and Riverdale.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure why, but his new show called Now Apocalypse, I fear so. His new show Now Apocalypse is streaming here on Stan, and I think it is more his own. He's not just a gun for hire, and the show is really about him taking this wild adult energy and creativity of indie filmmaking into the streaming space, and Steven Soderbergh is executive producing, which I think is significant.
A sign of quality.
Yeah.
Now quality product. Now Apocalypse, right. So it took me a while to go, oh, Apocalypse Now, Now Apocalypse.
Yeah, he's
clever.
Flipping that. And the show winds its way around this group of, you know, very beautiful, extremely emotionally confused, politically nihilistic, sexually ambiguous millennials.
This sounds like his back catalogue as well, which is great. I think a lot of fans will enjoy what this sounds like, at least. I think they'll enjoy this show, but sorry, go on.
Yeah, that's right.
The Doom Generation, nowhere. Go on.
Yeah, they're looking not just for fame and love, but for some kind of self-dignity and purpose in the wasteland of the Los Angeles entertainment industry. And he says it's a splashy millennial set comedy full of Lynchian surreal elements. Definitely the soundtrack has a lot of Frank Ocean, whose music has, you know, chronicled the super rich kids of LA for years. But Araki's characters aren't super rich kids. They're not. They look middle class, but they're almost down and out. And the show's, you know, questing protagonist Ulysses moved to LA, searching for life as an actor. Realized it's a narcissistic delusion. Now just wanders around vaping, dwelling on his astrology, going on strange Tinder dates. In the first episode, he meets this very beautiful man on Tinder, and their first kiss really cuts through the dullness of Ulysses' everyday life and triggers like an actual cosmic explosion.
Yes, and we see this in a wide shot, right? So it's a very long shot, and in the sky there's this explosion. So this more than fireworks, it's like a distant star exploding.
The show has this investment in dreams and in the possibility for human connection, and Ulysses becomes increasingly troubled by these nightmares in which aliens are conspiratorially taking over the world. And so LA isn't a place of dreams, it's a place of nightmares, which are as real as anything.
Absolutely. I mean, the first episode ends with a bit of a reveal, which is quite... Look, it's not for the faint-hearted, I would say, this
really?
Show.
Yeah.
Well, you know, well, in it toggles that it's between... quite... It's sexually explicit, for
oh,
one.
Yeah, a lot of sex, a lot of nudity, and then just this weird element of otherworldly things taking place in your everyday life. So here's Ulysses talking to his very droll, very funny best friend, Carly, who's played by Kelly Bergman, who is a former Disney star, so that's a nice little meta comment in there.
About what stardom and
the futility of it, I think. Mm. And, you know, it's a very visual show, but also a highly verbal show. Listen to this sparkling, super ironic dialogue, and also a language warning here.
I've been having this nightmare. The same one over and over, two or three times a week for the past month. And it's so vivid and freakishly real that when I wake up, it's still there, hovering over me like it's not just a dream. Like it's trying to tell me something.
Maybe smoke a smidge last pot before bedtime?
Carly, I'm being serious. But don't you ever get bizarre premonitions?
No.
Well, I do. And I'm a double Scorpio. It's the most psychic of all the signs. And I've had premonitions before, but this is different. It's like we're teetering on the brink of total annihilation.
Okay, well, that's every fucking day now in this tragic shit show era we're living in. But anyway...
But anyway.
I really like that Greg Araki himself lived through this end of days thing, which was real, which was the AIDS crisis of the late 1980s and 90s. And now he's speaking back to people my age, the current generation, and not speaking down to us, but saying, yeah, I understand why you feel you're living in this
era. Does he get it right? Do you think? Because there's a lot of people hooking up on Tinder and a lot of people with mobile devices in their hands at all moments.
Yeah,
does
that
he get
aspect
it?
Of technological, you know, disaster is ever present. I think what he's said is that the way he reads the world today is that a lot of progress was made in the last 50 years for, you know, people of colour, women, queer people, and now that progress is being erased or is undergoing a backlash. That's how he reads the political situation. So I find it quite wonderful that his brazenly political thinking is now coming through in this really trashy, watchable format.
Yeah, do you think there is a difference between the sort of his gun for hire work, doing things like Riverdale and so forth, which are very highly polished series. And here there's something of the anarchic spirit of those, especially earlier films. I mean, with Mysterious Skin and films like that, you got a bit more sort of polished. But
well, I tend to agree with the TV critic Andrea Longchu that Riverdale does not have characters, it has hairdos. It's kind of
This is kind of deeper.
It does. It almost has characters. And, he's trying to say something real, which is that there's a lot of cynicism in the present cultural mood, but he's not recycling that cynicism. He's talking about people who want to be open to life but don't know where they're going.
All right. Well, as I said, I spoke to Greg Araki, had the privilege of speaking to him, and I began our chat by asking him why it is that millennials now feel they're living in a uniquely apocalyptic time. Here he is.
I feel like everybody's living in the most apocalyptic time ever, in the sense that I've seen a lot of situations and a lot of administrations, but this one is like beyond anything I've ever seen before. In relation to the show, the mood is, people are trying to go about their lives, but there is this real sense of kind of chaos and it's a little bit of a scary time. I mean, the show is actually, it's really about young people. You know, it's kind of this crazy, sexy show, and it's about young people sort of going about their lives, but there's a sense of kind of this overriding, like, what's going on? Like, there's definitely kind of an uncertainty, and in the show, there's turned into this sort of metaphor of, like, this alien invasion, like, kind of, and the lead character's kind of a pothead, and, it's like, is this really happening, or is this all just a bad dream? And definitely that's a mood in America, I think, in terms of there being this feeling that things are spiraling out of control so quickly that it's almost not real.
Do you sort of have to pinch yourself that you're able to explore these themes with this tone and this style across 10 episodes on TV, and that someone's actually kind of shook your hand and given you the go-ahead, the green light to do it?
Absolutely. I mean, when we went in and pitched this show, we basically went in and pitched like this is like my dream TV show. Literally, we wrote it as a spec script, and I had no idea if anyone would ever do it. But it was sort of like, if I ever did do my own show, this was the show I wanted to do, and I just sort of said, this is what it is. And we just went in and pitched the craziest, sexiest show that was unlike anything else on TV. And I co-wrote it with my friend Carly Sturtino, who writes a sex column for Vogue. And I don't know if you have Slut Ever there. It's a Vice documentary show that screens here in the U.S. and other countries. But she's like this, she's I think 33 now, and she's just really cool and really fun. And we just have a very similar attitude about sex and sexuality and what an important part of life it is and what an important part of your development as a person, how much those your sexual experiences mean. There's like, it's across the board of sexuality, but the lead character is queer, and it's like a Sex and the City with like sort of Twin Peaks-y mystery and this sort of feeling of surrealism and what's happening, and it's unlike anything else on TV for sure. And Stars was brave enough and bold enough to just kind of give us carte blanche, and the 10 episodes are insane. I kind of can't believe it's on TV.
Tell me about the setting of LA and the backdrop of the film and TV industry. Do you think the industry, in a sense, it feels like it's often called upon to be a metaphor of the country and, American capitalism and more generally. Is that what's happening here, do you think?
I love LA. I'm based in LA. I was born here, and it's really my city. And through the many years I've been here, I've just seen so many crazy things. The Ulysses character, the lead character, actually says in episode 7, I think, that living in L.A. is like living inside a giant cartoon. And that's kind of why it's the ideal place for the show, because the universe of the show is kind of hyper-stylized. It's very colorful, and the people are all, the lead characters are super beautiful. The costumes and the design of it, it just has a very surreal aspect to it. And the thing about L.A. is it's kind of the dream factory, you know, it's where people come to, like, follow their dreams. And there's a level of fantasy and reality here where the line between them gets blurred like nowhere else in the world. And that's why it's kind of the only place, like, a show like this could happen, I think.
What do you think is the impact of the difference between when you started out and people wanting to tell queer or sexually fluid stories, if I can put it that way, now? I mean, clearly there's a lot more openness towards exploring sexuality on screen now, but I guess there's also more competition, right, to sort of be heard. How would you compare the two eras?
I mean, absolutely, things have changed. The culture has changed so much. We premiered Now Apocalypse at Sundance this year. The first time I was ever at Sundance was 1992 with a film I did called The Living In, which was this 16-millimeter kind of punk rock, guerrilla-made film about these two queer guys, and they're HIV positive, and they're kind of outlaws on the road. It was kind of, they were kind of like a Bonnie and Clyde type situation. And that movie was just viewed as like such a crazy punk rock out of the mainstream movie. And then to be back there in 2019 with Now Apocalypse, which is still pretty out there, it's still very upfront in its depiction of sex and sexuality and queer sexuality and bisexuality and straight sexuality. And to be there in 2019 with a star show that, you know, has billboards on Sunset Boulevard and is being promoted like a big TV show was kind of blew my mind that we've come this far in, you know, whatever that is, 27 years. And I feel like, that's one of the things about the show that I'm most proud of and most excited about is that, you know, in America, at least, I don't know, I think in Australia too, there's these people that are sort of trying to take us back, you know, and just like make America oppressive and terrible again, you know, make it, you know, for people of color, for women, for gay people, for, you know, so much progress has been made in the past 50 years. And, you know, there's all these kind of terrible people out there that are trying to make it, you know, put everything back in this closet of fear and shame and, you know, oppression. and that's why I feel like the show is so important. I mean, the show is very pop, very fun, and it's a fun show to watch, but I think it has an important message of acceptance, and I think it's really kind of a ray of light in these kind of dark and very uncertain times. And that's one of the reasons why it's absolutely, feel like it's absolutely a show for right now.
It feels like there's a real existential threat at the moment, politically, I guess, that perhaps represents a kind of apocalypse in a metaphorical way. And that's perhaps what's supplanted something like HIV/AIDS, perhaps in the early 90s, that was this kind of much more obviously medical and health-related kind of potential apocalypse. Now we've got this very political one. Would you agree with that? Is that not too much of a stretch to kind of compare the two eras and their sort of defining crises in that way?
I think that, you know, there's obviously different crises. But I do think that there's the same sense of urgency, you know, which is very much where a film like The Living End came from and the whole queer new wave in the first place. Where I do feel like it's an important time for artists to be working and to be saying something. And I'm very proud of what this show says.
All right. That's Greg Araki speaking to me there from LA. Now, Lauren Carol Harris, resident TV critic on The Screen Show. The theme of Western malaise is popping up a lot at the moment. I mean, that last question is really about that, the fact that there is so much kind of apocalyptic mood.
Yeah, I really see this as a bit of a theme that ghosts itself through a lot of what we watch today, whether you call it alienation or this stewing on the politically manic feel of the present. I mean, what Gregor Aki is doing is really interesting here, because he throws in this alien conspiracy like subplot, which is a crazy thing to do. But
it's very B-movie. It's lovely.
It's very B-movie. But what he's doing, I think, is allowing us to project our own concerns onto that like alien invader. So whatever you feel, whether it's economic precarity or, you know, concern about Brexit or Trump or I don't know, or just some existential feeling that your life isn't what you thought it was going to be, you can go there with alien subplot.
But it's not aliens like in Us or something. It's kind of, they're predatory. And his depiction of LA is full of predatory men, especially. Yeah. It's quite dark, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what it's interesting to think about new queer cinema and what it's become, because it was said that defiance was a key thing about that. I mean, what's going on here? I don't think this is a show about defiance. I wouldn't say that. There's an American journalist, Megan Vick, who said that the sex in Apocalypse Now is concerned with liberation, not
now
labels.
Apocalypse, yeah.
In Apocalypse. And I think that's true. There is something about the show, because it is so, there's these flickers of real originality, and it does transcend a lot of the blandness and kind of glossy high production values of prestige TV that can really mask a lot of sameness. And, you know, there's a lot of shows that pop up under that prestige TV banner, which are more marketed like that. And then they fall away from the cultural conversation. We don't talk about them in a year's time. There's something kind of unnourishing and not coherent about Now Apocalypse in the end, I feel. Mm-hmm. It's very much about its own style. You know, everyone's ironically dressed in pink sunnies and Hawaiian print pants, looking like the host of a reality TV show.
But it's worth watching, because I think there's so many...
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Iraqi's putting a lot in.
I think eventually the show has to get real. And in the second season, I hope it does that and leave the irony behind, because there is something kind of... this blend of comedy and strange drama and fantastical dream worlds, and that wild aesthetic for a wild era, really, it has captivated me.
Okay. Well, we look forward to the second series. Lauren Carol Harris, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jason.
That's Lauren Carol Harris, resident TV critic on The Screen Show.